The Lord's Prayer. Looking through the lens of the one and only divine mind and divine love enables one to gain a more insightful and complete view of its spiritual meaning. And this can be applied to all humanity or to an individual specific case. In either case, it must be applied impersonally, just as Jesus taught all of his parables on an impersonal basis. The three quotes at the beginning of the textbook of Christian Science, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, is a wonderful introduction to get our thought in the right line of thinking, or rather to accept the knowing of God as it applies to the Lord's Prayer. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. John 8:32. 2. There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. Mary Baker G. Eddy. Looking to mind to inspire and guide, these are the thoughts that come to the surface at this moment. Regarding the first quote, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. These are the words of Jesus being quoted by John. And in the verses immediately preceding this particular verse, Jesus is explaining that he must be recognized for who he is. And he states that God is always with him because he does the will of God. Just as God is always with everyone that does the will of God. Because that means that one is abiding by the laws of God, by following the qualities of God, expressing them in daily thought, speech, and action. So in verse 32, Jesus is saying that if we recognize his relationship with God, that knowing that truth elevates our own lives so that we will no longer be a slave to sin. Sin, of course, is what the universal belief is about the progeny of mankind being a descendant of Adam. And Adam, described in Genesis chapter 2 and many chapters following that, indicates because Adam sinned that we, as his progeny, also have that built into our DNA. If we recognize who Jesus really is as representing the Christ consciousness of God by reflection, that we will no longer be a slave to that universal belief, which states that we are a sinner, but we will be set free and realize that we really have a DNA that comes directly from the one and only Father and Mother of us, which is God. Not a human mother or a human father or a combination, not Adam, but God is our Father and Mother. God being our Mother is described in the spiritual interpretation of the first verse of the Lord's Prayer. The second quote at the beginning of Science and Health states, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so," and that's from Shakespeare. So if we let the light of divine mind shine on this, it is easy to understand that since the definition of God includes God as being the only mind, as stated on page 587 in the Glossary of Science and Health, where it says, "Good is God, Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction." And omniscience includes omni-intelligence, omni-knowing, and omni-wisdom. So the only intelligence there is, the only knowing there is, the only wisdom there is of God. We don't own anything, but we have the ability, the capacity, and the freedom to reflect all of the qualities of God. Therefore, the thinking that we are able to do is really a reflection of the knowing of God. Because God doesn't have to think, because God is all-knowing. Thinking is a tributary of the knowing of God. So we can skip right to knowing by reflecting the knowing of God. And we can do that by claiming our right to it, accepting it, and living it, which results from accepting it. So all thought, speech, and action can be reflecting the knowing of God. And that can apply to any topic whatsoever that is a part of our experience. The third quote, which to repeat, says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou hear and everywhere." And that's by Mary Baker Eddy, as stated previously. And what kind of a prayer is Mary Baker Eddy referring to when she says God has heard her prayer? There's nothing we could tell God, even if he was listening, that he doesn't already know, because God is all-knowing. The Bible says we should pray without ceasing. Now, the only way that we can do that, I believe, is to be living the prayer that we are desiring to be true. This, again, relies on reflection, since God is the source of everything. If God is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniaction, there is nothing left. That means God is all. That means that everything that we see, hear, feel, taste, and smell is a manifestation of God, not of any other source. And if we are seeing, hearing, feeling, touching, or smelling something that is evil, then one is looking through the wrong lens. We are not looking through the lens of the only substance, which is spirit, which is flawless, which is transparent, and therefore is reflecting everything that is good and perfect. It's in the universe of thought. If we will tune into it, we can hear it talking, exclaiming the qualities of God. If we have our every thought, speech, and action in alignment with the qualities of God, it's not that God is hearing what we say, but what we say is in alignment with God's laws, God's qualities, and therefore we benefit from the power and the presence that automatically comes with that alignment. Everything in our life unfolds in a beautiful way, providing constant transformation to higher and higher levels of understanding, which automatically brings with it higher and higher levels of spiritual experience, whereby we are overcoming the belief of being enslaved to sin. And sin strictly means that we are doing something that is less than 100% godlike. So we're transforming our consciousness from a false belief of being someone born as a progeny of a human mother, a human father, which means that we are inheriting the sinful sense of Adam and Eve, instead of inheriting our freedom from those false beliefs and having the origin of God as our father and mother. And that origin is flawless, because spirit is the only substance, and spirit is flawless. That means we are flawless. We only have to open our eyes by letting the inspiration and enlightenment of mind shine the true light on our consciousness. That enables us to correct our senses, which are soul, from a material perspective, which is false, to the reality of it being spiritual senses, which is the way we can properly identify everything using the spiritual vision, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling of spirit, instead of the false substance, which is called matter. Let us look at what Mary Baker Eddy provides to us as an introduction to the Lord's Prayer, which includes the spiritual interpretation which she has provided to earnest seekers of truth. And we shall begin at the bottom of page 14 of the first chapter of Science and Health, which is entitled Prayer. When thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret will reward thee openly. we've already discussed how that can be applied, which means that we align ourselves with the Christ consciousness, with the truth, and then automatically we gain the benefits of the qualities of God. And those are experienced in individual ways that meet every human need. By meeting every human need is meant to be affirming that no one can be deficient in any way, because God is perfect. No one could have a forgetful mind. No one could be lazy, because God is omniactive. And no one could have a forgetful mind, because God is all-knowing. But as Genesis 1 states, we have to let that truth be admitted into our consciousness. We have to claim it as ours by reflection, so that we can benefit from the truth about God. The next paragraph is entitled Spiritual Sanctuary. So spake Jesus. The closet typifies the sanctuary of spirit, the door of which shuts out sinful sense, but lets in truth, life, and love. Closed to error, it is open to truth, and vice versa. The Father in secret is unseen to the physical senses, but He knows all things and rewards according to motives, not according to speech. To enter into the heart of prayer, the door of the erring senses must be closed. Lips must be mute and materialism silent, that man may have audience with spirit, the divine principle love, which destroys all error. In this paragraph that is entitled Spiritual Sanctuary, Mary Baker Eddy is giving us an opportunity to prepare our thought for what comes in the Lord's Prayer. So everyone must have a filtering system at the entrance to the consciousness of each one of us individually, so that we shut out any sinful sense. And remember, sin is thinking, saying, or doing anything that is less than 100% godlike. And the definition in the glossary of good indicates that God is spirit. That means flawless. No, a big storm, anything that causes a disruption, an earthquake, flood, those are not acts of God. No matter what a corrupt insurance industry tries to sell you as being something beyond their control, and therefore they will not pay for damages that are deemed to be caused by acts of God. We must know the only acts of God are acts of goodness, because God is good. So, as it states in the bottom of the paragraph on Spiritual Sanctuary, where it says, lips must be mute and materialism silent, that man may have audience with spirit, the divine principle love, which destroys all error. The next introductory paragraph to the Lord's Prayer is entitled Effectual Invocation. In order to pray aright, we must enter into the closet and shut the door. We must close the lips and silence the material senses. In the quiet sanctuary of earnest longings, we must deny sin and plead God's allness. We must resolve to take up the cross and go forth with honest hearts to work and watch for wisdom, truth, and love. We must pray without ceasing. Such prayer is answered insofar as we put our desires into practice. The Master's injunction is that we pray in secret and let our lives attest our sincerity. Our motive is going to be what brings forth our thought, speech, and action. So if our motive is pure, our thought, speech, and action will follow. If our motive is evil, our thought, speech, and action will follow. Shakespeare said, "There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." So the something that comes forth from our motive is going to be directly related to our thoughts. As it states, we must live our prayer. It says the Master's injunction that we pray in secret and let our lives attest our sincerity. How are we going to live our life? With a pure motive that is to bless all mankind? Are we going to live the golden rule? Everyone desires their highest sense of good to come to them. We must provide our highest sense of good that we give to others. Loving is giving. Reflecting the mind of God is giving. And we use soul to identify with spiritual seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling so that we can detect where there is a need that gives us an opportunity to do intelligent giving. Because humanity lives under the belief of born a sinner, we are foolish if we just give ignorantly, haphazardly, without letting the intelligence of God guide us with every move we make, every step we take, every thought we think, every motive we have must be godlike. The next preparatory paragraph to the Lord's Prayer is entitled Trustworthy Beneficence. Christians rejoice in secret beauty and bounty, hidden from the world, but known to God. Self-forgetfulness, purity, and affection our constant prayers, practice, not profession, understanding, not belief, gain the ear and right hand of omnipotence, and they assuredly call down infinite blessings. Without a fitness for holiness, we cannot receive holiness. That last sentence is very important. Without a fitness for holiness, we cannot receive holiness. It's like the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Be holy, and we will receive holiness. The next paragraph, loftiest adoration. A great sacrifice of material things must precede this advanced spiritual understanding. The highest prayer is not one of faith merely, it is demonstration. Such prayer heals sickness and must destroy sin and death. It distinguishes between truth that is sinless and the falsity of sinful sense. Key word here is demonstration. As we are living our life, doing our highest level of reflecting the qualities of God, we should be able to see visual evidence of transformation within our life. Everything should be getting better. Everything should be closer and closer to recognizing that we're reflecting the harmony of divine principle, the balance. And it's because we are adopting the structure and system, which are the qualities of divine principle, and that automatically brings with it the balance and harmony. When we're operating in a structure of spirit with a system that is spiritual, there is no other path for our life to go than to be the path of reflecting God. We will be living the example that Christ Jesus showed us. He was the Son of God. That was his title. In fact, when people ask him about what is the greatest commandment, they said, "Good Master, what is the greatest commandment of all?" And he said, "Why call me good? There is none good but God." So he clearly states that he is not God. In fact, he states that he's not even good. I believe what he really means is that the goodness that he reflects is a reflection of the goodness of God. It's not something that he owns, but it's something that he reflects. If we own something, that's very limited. But if we reflect something that is from the infinite God, then there's no limit to what we can reflect. We just have to recognize that we are reflecting from an infinite source. And then we open the pathway to what Mary Baker Eddy describes as infinite progression. And we'll be striving for concrete being. Because she states that infinite progression is concrete being. we are getting closer and closer to the meat, the Lord's Prayer. The title to the next introductory paragraph is The Prayer of Jesus Christ. Our Master taught His disciples one brief prayer, which we name after Him the Lord's Prayer. Our Master said, "After this manner, therefore, pray ye." And then He gave the prayer, which covers all human needs. There is indeed some doubt among Bible scholars whether the last line is not an addition to the prayer by a later copyist. But this does not affect the meaning of the prayer itself. In the phrase, "deliver us from evil," the original properly reads, "deliver us from the evil one." This reading strengthens our scientific apprehension of the petition, for Christian Science teaches us that the evil one, or one evil, is but another name for the first lie and all liars. Only as we rise above all material sensuousness and sin can we reach the heaven-born aspiration and spiritual consciousness which is indicated in the Lord's Prayer and which instantaneously heals the sick. Here, let me give what I understand to be the spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, which art in heaven. Our Father, Mother God, all harmonious. Hallowed be Thy name, Adorable One. Thy kingdom come. Thy kingdom is come. Thou art ever present. Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Enable us to know, as in heaven, so on earth, God is omnipotent, supreme. Give us this day our daily bread. Give us grace for today. Feed the famished affections. And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And love is reflected in love. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And God leadeth us not into temptation, but delivereth us from sin, disease, and death. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. For God is infinite, all power, all life, truth, love, over all and all. Let us take a look at these individual verses with the related spiritual interpretation by Mary Baker Eddy and see how we can apply that to any situation that comes our way. Because Mary Baker Eddy stated that if we spiritually understand this prayer, it will meet every human need. So let's see how we can make this practical on a day-to-day basis, no matter what comes our way that tries to obstruct or slow down or divert our spiritual transformation to a higher level of being an idea of God and living it as a spiritual reflection of the one and only source, which of course is God. What is God? Mary Baker Eddy defines it throughout the entire 600 pages of the first 17 chapters of Science and Health. But let's go to chapter 14, which is entitled Recapitulation, which is the recapitulation of chapters 1 through 13. And it is in question and answer form, so it's very easy to just select the question, what is God, which is the beginning of the chapter, which emphasizes the importance of starting with God and getting a better understanding of exactly what God is. This is on page 465. What is God? God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. On page 587, she states it just a little bit differently. She says, God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. I will repeat it here, but I previously stated the definition of good, which is on the same page. God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. As stated, these definitions makes it very clear if we understand what each of the words mean. The founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, Helen Wright, wrote a book entitled Your Divinity Revealed. And in it, chapters 4 through 10 cover each of those seven primary terms of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And if one would study those seven chapters, in fact, it's recommended that one begin at the beginning of the book and study the book to the end. And then, because this is so important, that one go back to chapter 14 and study through the end of chapter 10. And then do it again and again And as long as one wants to advance spiritually, continue to study those seven chapters as long as one wants to advance. And of course, along with that, one should be studying the textbook also from beginning to end. And there's 700 pages, and the first 600 are covering every major topic in Christian Science, and the last 101 pages, ending on page 700, are 85 different individuals that have had these things that are stated verified, and what they're stating is testimonies about their experience in studying the textbook. It's very important when one studies the textbook to be on a systematic structure and system so that they begin at the very beginning and go to the very end and study it in that sequence. Also, it is highly recommended that in both of these books that have been referred to, that one record everything that they study. And then, as they're going through each book, stop at the end of each key point and rephrase it in one's own words. Again, recording everything. Any notes that occurs to one, any thoughts, record it. And then play it back and listen to it at some other time. And you will be amazed at how many things you will be recording that are direct messages from God. Because as you tune in with an earnest desire to seek the truth, it will come out of your mouth as you record. And you won't realize till later when you're listening to this that it was not from you. You'll probably say something like I do when I do this same procedure, which is continuously. You will say to yourself, where did that come from? In other words, at the moment, you didn't even realize what you were saying, because it was passing directly from God to the recorder. You will find that if you follow this system that was just suggested, your advancement in spiritual understanding of not only the Lord's Prayer, but all of Christian Science will be like you were experiencing a catapult that puts you into another dimension of spiritual understanding with a force that could not be deflected, diluted, stopped or reversed. Because the truth does not change. The truth is always true. And we must express our gratitude for any inspiration we receive as we're doing these extemporaneous recordings. Because the truth doesn't change. And we must be grateful for the truth that is revealed to us. And that's one of the reasons for recording it. It will, number one, keep your thought focused very acutely on what you're doing, and it will then prevent any distractions from trying to enter in to your spiritual study. With that in mind, let us proceed with the Lord's Prayer, verse by verse. So as stated, the first verse, it's like saying, "Dear Joe," or "Dear Harriet," or "Dear whoever." You're writing a letter. You're identifying their position. You might say, "Dear friend Joe," or "Dear Aunt Harriet," or "Dear mother," or "Father," or "Dad," "Dear business associate," "Dear friend." You're addressing their position, and you're addressing them by name. So there's no question about who it is that this message is going to be intended to be received by. Now, the second thing that is said here, which is the spiritual interpretation of what was just stated, "Our Father which art in heaven," the spiritual interpretation states, "Our Father, Mother God," all harmonious. Now, if we think about that definition of God, the word life typically addresses the fatherhood of God. And the word love addresses the motherhood quality of God. The word truth addresses the sonship, which was the part that Jesus plays in this overall theme. So we have the Father, the Son, and the Mother. And what does a mother do? A mother nurtures. The Father gives life and courage and strength, focus, determination. And the Mother gives the caring, the kindness, the thoughtfulness, consideration, tenderness, affection. Think of your consciousness as a garden. You want to nurture that garden so that it brings forth the most wonderful abundance of results. Fruitage. And it will do that if you nurture it. Let's suppose that you think that you are low on something that you need, or maybe you're out of it totally. It can be anything. Food, shelter, clothing, transportation, a job, income, money in the bank to pay your utility bill when it comes in the next 3 days. Anything at all in your life that appears to be limited, you can think about the fact that divine love meets every human need. And And if you think about that and reason why that is the case, you see, love represents the word wholeness and completeness. Can you lack anything if you are living the life of love? If you are giving, can you lack having what you need to meet your daily human needs? You know, it's very funny how human nature seems to be slanted to taking. It seems to be built on fear that there's not enough to go around. So you have to fight for your share. But the truth is that there is an infinite supply of everything. Because it all begins with mind. Just as Shakespeare told us, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And just like Jesus tells us, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Thinking you have a lack is a sin, because that's not God-like. God doesn't lack anything. And if we are a manifestation of God, that means we cannot in reality lack a single thing. Doesn't matter what it is. Suppose we're taking piano lessons. Or suppose we're taking a course on business management or chemistry, physics, mathematics, homemaking, investing. It doesn't matter what the topic is, but we're trying to learn something. Is it possible for us to have a difficult time learning something if we know that God is the all-knowing mind? We need to fake it until we make it. In other words, we need to claim it and affirm it, even though we may not understand what we're claiming and affirming. And we need to do that because we need to get our thought in alignment with the truth. And the truth is that God knows everything. God is all-knowing. Genesis 1 states that we must let man be made in the image and likeness of God. And then the next verse says, and God made man in the image and likeness of God. But we had to let it happen in our consciousness before we could benefit from the truth of what it's telling us. Mary Baker Eddy defined, interpreted, translated the first few words of Genesis chapter 1, where it says, in the beginning. She translated that to mean in the only. So in the only creation there is, Genesis 1 describes it. In other words, there is no second Genesis that is talking about the truth. Because it says at the very beginning, there went up a mist. Do we want to be looking through the mist and trying to figure out what is there and define it? Because if we do, we're using a so-called material sense of soul, of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, instead of the spiritual sense of soul, which is spiritual seeing, spiritual hearing, and so forth. The Bible indicates that our capacity comes from God. God is omnipotent. God is omni-intelligence. There's no limitation with God. So it doesn't matter what we might be having difficulty with, we have to claim that our intelligence, our knowing, our understanding comes from the infinite one that knows all, that understands all, that is all, that is all wisdom. God doesn't have to figure out anything because God is the source of the truth. There's no other source of truth than God. The definition of God is stated in the Bible many different ways, but it took the desire and the unrelentless pursuit by Mary Baker Eddy to put it into one simple definition. Physicists have tried for thousands of years to figure out how did the earth come about? What makes it tick? What keeps all those stars up there? What keeps the earth rotating around the sun and rotating on its own axis? These have puzzled civilization since the beginning of time. Since the very beginning, it has been a puzzle. Mary Baker Eddy had her thought open to the truth. She didn't say, well, you got to give me a material reason for it. I want to see it with my own eyes. I want to touch it with my hands. I want to feel it within myself. No. That's not what she did. She was seeking for the truth no matter what it was. Anyone that is a real researcher will do the same thing. They will let their seeking, pursuit, perseverance for the truth lead them to wherever the truth is. And they're going to forget all about any kind of a bias. If they thought they already knew the answer, they're not going to be in the right frame of thought to pursue the real answer because they already think they know it all. Only if we pursue it without any preconceived notions can we ever find the truth about anything. Anything. If we're really smart, when we take a class in mathematics, at the very beginning, when we're learning the mathematical tables, we'll test it out for ourselves. We can take pencils and lay them on our desk. We can have three on one side and three on the other. And then we bring them together and see how many there are when we combine them. And then we count them. Oh my goodness, there are six of them. Oh my goodness, the mathematical tables say that 3 + 3 = 6. Oh my goodness. They convince themselves that it is true because they tested it. That's what we have to do when we are studying the textbook of Christian Science, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. We have to test everything that we're learning. And when we test it, and we find that it's true, then we will use it as a part of our life. Let's go to the second verse. Hallowed be thy name. The spiritual interpretation, adorable one. Did Jesus ever once say, you should worship me, I'm your God? I created everything. I created the earth and everything in it. I created you. Whether you're a male or a female, whether you're a child or an adult, I created you. Well, if you found that in any kind of a Bible that is authentic, I would like to see it. When Jesus himself said he is not God, and he said that in many, many times throughout the Bible, throughout the New Testament. He was always yielding to God. His life was yielding to God. In fact, he said on more than one occasion, Father, I pray to you that you may open their eyes. In fact, Old Testament writers also said that. So we need to look to only one as God. Hallowed be thy name. God is all in all. God is the great I am, as that one definition of God said. The great I am, all knowing, all seeing, all hearing, all acting, all wise, all loving and eternal. That's the only one we should be looking to as God. I remember I was taking a class one time, and the individual that I was taking the class from had discovered something that a genius mathematician from Italy discovered. His name was Fibonacci. And I had a very close relationship with a well-experienced Christian Science practitioner for many years. And when I was taking that class was during that time that she was here on Earth. And my enthusiasm about what I learned about mathematics that was discovered by Fibonacci was so enlightening to me that I shared it with her. And she is the first one that told me, don't trust a human for your knowledge. She said, test it. Test it in your own way. Let God guide you on how to test it, to see if there's a divine principle involved. Make it your own. Don't just repeat what is in any textbook or what you have in notes from the classes that you've taken on this topic about this one mathematician. Test it. Make it your own. Put it in your own words. Make sure that you are convinced because you saw it work. then what Einstein said really comes into play. He said, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. When Einstein learned about Mary Baker Eddy's discoveries, she had already been gone for several decades, and he was kind of interested in it, but doubting it, because it was written by a woman, and back in those days, a woman could not vote, could not own land, could not own property, not just land, but could not own property in their own name. So they weren't really considered a regular citizen because they didn't have the rights that a man did. But then he had a friend whose last name was Underwood, who was also a doctorate in physics. And Dr. Underwood was chosen to be on the Atomic Energy Commission for the United States, who was researching how to make an atom bomb. This was around 1940 or so. And they had the very evil purpose of wanting to use it on civilization, to destroy. Now, whether or not the people in the commission all knew that it was going to be for that purpose, I don't know. But Dr. Underwood was on there. And everyone except Dr. Underwood passed on as a result of radiation. And when Einstein realized that his friend was the only one that survived, he said, how did you do it? How did you survive? Why is everyone else gone and you're perfect health? And Dr. Underwood told him flat out, I'm a student of the works of Mary Baker Eddy. She stated 80 years ago that matter is unreal, and that spirit is the only real substance. She taught that there is no life, truth, or intelligence in matter. That all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. So I don't have to be concerned about radiation or any other thing that can take away my life. Because as she explains it in her textbook, God is the only life. And the life is spiritual. It's not made up of atoms or chemicals or anything else. So then, instead of having a dabbling interest because it was a woman, he respected his friend very much. And then he really got serious about studying Christian Science. He attended the local church. He went into the reading room, which is something that churches are supposed to have. It's like a private library where you have a quiet place and out of the hustle and bustle of daily life, and you can go in there for however much time you want that they're open and have a private place, quiet, to study. And of course, this day and age, you know, there's computers available and all kinds of things for tools, but they're rare. The reason they're rare is because the bureaucracy of the church became very corrupt, and they separated Mary Baker Eddy from Christian Science. They took her picture out of her own textbook. They blew up and destroyed all monuments and statues that are in her honor. They rarely mention her name in any publication whatsoever. And what happens when you remove the discoverer from the discovery? The discovery is invalid. It doesn't work. Because you've only got part of it. And you've removed one of the very important parts. That's why Jesus told his audience that is related in John, that was referred to earlier in this recording, he said, when you recognize who I am, then you shall know the truth and you will be free. Several times when Jesus recognized somebody as they were walking or riding an animal or whatever down the roadway, and he saw someone that needed help, he would ask him, do you have faith that you can be healed? In Galilee, they didn't have much faith because they looked upon Jesus as being just another human being, because they saw him right after he was born and they thought of him either as being a child or as a carpenter. No one special. You could touch him. You could shake hands with him. You could hug him. You could whatever. You know, he was there. He was visible like everyone else. So he didn't spend much time in healing works in Galilee because there was no faith. You're not going to be benefited from the works of Jesus unless you recognize his position. What is it? He was the Son of God. God is not a human, but he was one that followed the qualities of God in his daily living. That's what he represented. He represented the qualities of God in all thought, speech, and action. So if you're going to separate Fibonacci from what Fibonacci discovered, or you're going to separate Mary Baker Eddy from what Mary Baker Eddy discovered, or you're going to separate Einstein from what he discovered, or anyone else, that means you are trying to steal the idea instead of seeing the wholeness of the individual who had the courage and strength and perseverance to discover what they discovered. So you are shifting from seeing the wholeness to trying to steal the part that you want. It's not going to work. Christian Science was the fastest growing movement of any religion in recorded history. In a matter of a few decades, it went from zero in 1875 when she discovered it, or 1866 when she discovered it, in 1875 when she published her first edition of Science and Health, to having no churches, to being one of the most prolific religion in the entire planet Earth. There were churches everywhere. Large cities like New York, Los Angeles, Chicago. They'd have 40 or 50 churches. Be almost like a gas station or a convenience store. They're everywhere. And they had healings, healings, and healings. They recorded millions of healings throughout the world. And that's why it grew so fast, because it was bringing results. But everyone was giving gratitude for Mary Baker Eddy. They were recognizing her as the discoverer, the founder, and the leader. But the bureaucracy was doing the opposite. They wanted to have control of all the churches throughout the world. She herself said that when she left this earth, all of these various departments that are set forth in the manual would self-expire because they required her signature to approve their renewal. She forbid any church to even use the bylaws of the church in Boston as their bylaws. She had a publication called the Christian Science Sentinel, and there was a branch with a tree, and she showed the branches being separated from the tree. That was, the second version. The first version is they were all connected. And then she realized that everyone had to be independent, so she changed the picture. Everyone is independent. If we're taking a course in something, we have to make it our own. If we're studying Christian Science, we have to make it our own. Put it in our own words. Test it. Do we understand it? Look back at the original. What does it say? What do we say? How close are we to it when we put it in our own words? Mary Baker Eddy said, "Follow me only as long as I am following the Christ." Have you ever seen any founder of any church say those kind of words? No. They put out a book on their church and they say, "This is it." This is it. Christian Science is a whole different animal. Einstein said, "Religion without science is blind. Science without religion is lame." Christian Science is the only religion that has it all. That's why it's called Christian. That's the religion. And science, because it's a science. What does Mary Baker Eddy say on page 146? There's a statement about the system of divine metaphysics. She says the following: "Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle, upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And then on page 330, from 330 for, I think it's 10 or 11 pages, is a list of 32 specific short paragraphs that she calls the platform of Christian Science. And those 32 paragraphs, she titles them as planks. And she says, when the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. Wow. So out of 700 pages, she tells us that there's a system. And in 10 pages, she tells us 32 paragraphs that we must understand. And then we can demonstrate it. We can prove it to be true. We can heal any problem we have. And we've told you in this recording how to go about it. Start at the very beginning of Science and Health. And after each key thought, put it in your own words. Add any extra notes. And record every single thing. The original, your interpretation, in your own words, and any notes. Record the whole shooting match. The whole inshallah. And then listen to what you recorded. With today's equipment available, whatever time you spend studying, you can listen to it while you're doing something else. But you have to pay attention to what you're listening to. But if you're doing something routine, taking a shower, preparing food, if you're the one that does it in your home, or maybe live by yourself and you're doing it, whatever. Driving a car where you're not in busy traffic, where you can listen to something without distracting you from doing the proper job of driving. Waiting in line at a grocery store to check out. Whatever. Walking. You might park your car and walk around to do your shopping in a shopping center or something. Mary Baker Eddy says the single most important thing that determines the difference between success and failure is how we use our moments. A moment is defined as the smallest amount of time. It's not a mathematical measurement. It's defined by the words that were just stated. So you can't divide it. You can't multiply it. Well, yeah, I guess you could multiply it. You could say I spent 3 or 4 moments. But you can't divide a moment because that is the smallest. But we have an unlimited number of moments in a day. We have 1,440 minutes. How are we using that time? Richard Strain is on our website as an author. We have over 100 authors. And he said he was at the end of his rope. He didn't know what to do. He wanted to rely on Christian Science, but he just didn't even have any time to study. He was apparently occupied 18 hours a day on other things. And he used the remaining time to sleep and eat and transportation, I guess. So he went to a practitioner who apparently had a good reputation for success in healing and so forth. And he says, I don't know what to do. She said, well, how much are you studying? He said, I don't have time to study. I'm not spending any time studying. She made a very simple statement, a few words. She said, if you're not studying five, that's F-I-V-E, 5 hours a day, you're not going to make the progress that you need to make. He said, well, how am I going to do that? She said nothing. She was like Jesus. When Herod asked him, what is truth? He didn't answer. He knew that they wouldn't accept it, wouldn't have anything to do with whether they were going to crucify him or not, so he kept quiet. And when he did talk, he said, say yea, yea, or nay, nay. In other words, don't be in long conversations with people and say nothing. Get to the point and say it and be quiet. When he was tempted after spending 40 days and 40 nights in the desert before he started his ministry, and the devil tempted him, the devil would give him this enticement and that enticement, three different big ones. In each case, Jesus quoted a short verse from the Bible that exactly reversed what the devil was trying to tempt him to do. And of course, devil is nothing but a mental suggestion. There's no real live person that is a devil. We may personify someone. We may attach that title to somebody. But that's not what Jesus did. He overthrew the tables of the money changers. They were doing something evil, trying to make money off of people coming into the church service. I don't remember him being a record of him saying anything. He just did it. He took the action. He rooted out the evil. He made it impossible for them to work. Their tables were all upset. It was over. That's what we need to do. That's how we need to handle evil. Not as a person. Not as a person. We must depersonalize everything that is not good. In fact, even things that are good, we should give credit to God, because that's the source of everything. Okay, let's go to the third verse. Thy kingdom come. The spiritual interpretation. Thy kingdom is come. Thou art ever present. So what does that mean? How can the kingdom of God be right where we are? I can't see him. I can't see it. Well, then we're blind. Have you ever looked up in the sky and say, wow, what a beautiful sky. What a beautiful sunshine. It's nice and warm. And we just had a big rain and it's really wonderful to feel this warmth and dryness. How about a rose? Have you ever seen a beautiful rose or a flower of any kind? How about something that has a wonderful fragrance? How about a beautiful tree? How about a skilled mother or wife that prepares a beautiful dinner? Are you appreciating the skill and the talents of the individual? These are all symbols of God. God is right where we are. God is giving us good everywhere we are. Have you ever had a good feeling? That's from God. Mary Baker Eddy says, the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. That goes with all seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. We have those senses that are the substance of spirit for a reason. So we can recognize that God is expressed in symbols. 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 We need to be expressing gratitude for the symbols. Are we grateful when we, if we're studying Mary Baker Eddy's works, are we grateful for having those tools available? How about a computer? Do we use a computer? Do we use a cell phone? Do we ever express gratitude for the qualities that are expressed in what was created in the devices that we're using as our tools? How about instant communication on the internet? Are we grateful for that? Are we grateful for having a car that lets us transport ourselves from one place to another where we need to be? Everything in our life gives us an opportunity to sort it, whether it's good or bad. Everything that we sort to be good, we should give gratitude to God for, because they are expressed in symbols. All beauty, all fragrance, all understanding, that's hearing, feeling, tasting, smelling, everything that is of a spiritual nature comes from God. So yes, thy kingdom is come, thou art ever present. God is right here. Will we let God in our consciousness to be our guide? Are we going to recognize him? Are we going to be like Einstein? At first, he kind of shunned Christian Science because it was from a woman who couldn't vote, couldn't own property. But later, he made this statement. He said, blessed, and this is on our website in the header. It's at the top of every single page, these quotes from Einstein that I'm reiterating. He says, blessed art thou, and that's a capital T that he used. And this was Mary Baker Eddy's talking about. Blessed art thou, for everything that is in this book. That's science and health. Imagine, he went from saying, oh, a woman did this? Oh, well, forget it. To saying, everything that is right here. And he also said, imagine, and this tells you how he had to humble himself. He says, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. See there? He had to admit it. That was before he even thought about the fact that there was no matter. He realized that in his work, that there was no matter. The people that broke down the atom realized that there was no matter. They realized that it was energy, not something that was opaque that you could touch. Yeah, they realized there was no matter. That's what quantum physics was all about. Also called quantum mechanics, discovered around 1900. 35 years after Mary Baker Eddy discovered Christian Science, and stated, one of the very first things she stated was that there's no life, truth, or intelligence, or substance in matter. John asked Jesus, and this is on our website, and the original document that they've found apparently in some archaeological discovery, is under lock and key in a London museum. John asked Jesus, is there a material body? What do you think Jesus' answer was? I'll give you a clue. It was one word, and it has not three letters, but two. And it starts with N. He said no. So then John asked him, is there a material world, a material universe? Jesus said, everyone thinks there is, but there is not. There is no material universe. See, that's how he was able to heal instantaneously. He realized that everything that he saw that was not in accordance with the perfection of God, his only mother, father, that it was false. It was a false picture that was being imaged forth on our thought from universal belief. That's how he did all of his healings. And if you study science and health in the method that was suggested in this recording, you will get a better and better understanding, and you'll be able to also eventually get to the point where you can heal in a very short time or maybe instantaneously. Frederick Rawson, Wentworth Winslow, and Joel Goldsmith all had 15-minute appointments. That was it. 15 minutes, the patient was gone. Joel Goldsmith walked in a nursing home, Christian Science nursing home, and everyone had the same problem. And he was called to come in there. He said, everybody's sick. He looked upon all of them as being one patient. And he healed them all in one short visit to the nursing home. He healed everyone. Fifteen-minute appointments. Frederick L. Rawson said that we should never have to do anything with our physical body. He said everything is mental. We should be able to take care of it mentally without lifting a finger. He was an expert sportsman, everything he excelled in. And he went to a shooting contest one time. And the rifle he was given to use, he had never had it in his hands before. Never shot that model of rifle. Didn't know anything about it, other than just his normal sportsmanship knowledge. And he picked up the gun. And apparently he aimed it at the bullseye target. And then he turned his body away, his head away from the target, and closed his eyes. And he focused on who God was and who he, as God's image and likeness, was. And when he had a oneness of consciousness about this, and he felt totally in alignment with God and at peace, still with his eyes closed, his head turned away from the target, he got a bullseye. He won the tournament. There's an example where he did it mentally, because he wasn't even looking at the target when he pulled the trigger. Mary Baker Eddy transported herself from Boston, or no, I think it was Concord, New Hampshire, to the west coast of the U.S. Now, they didn't have airplanes back in the 1800s. Didn't have any rockets. she wanted to take a couple of weeks off and go visit someone. And so she transported herself. There's no limit to what can be done. Thy kingdom come, thy kingdom is come. It's here right now. Okay, the next verse. Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. The translation, enable us to know as in heaven, so on earth, God is omnipotent supreme. It doesn't matter what the problem is, God is in control. There's no other power. There's no competition. There's no opposition to God because God is the only power. As in heaven, so on earth. Everything is perfect in what we believe heaven to be. But it's right here on earth. Because as it said just up above, thou art ever present. The next verse. Give us this day our daily bread. Translation, give us grace for today. Feed the famished affections. So what is our daily bread? It said that Jesus was breaking bread with his disciples. He was explaining the truth to them. He wasn't tearing the bread apart in pieces. That was a symbol. What he was really doing was explaining the truth to them. Next verse, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And love is reflected in love. Are we giving? How about thinking of forgiving as being forward in our giving? There's a movie called Pay It Forward. And it says to give, and don't worry about the fact that you don't owe anybody anything. Just give to whoever is in need. Have the heart, the animus, the love of wanting to give to other people. Frederick L. Rawson says that our purpose on life is to make other people happy. Are we doing that? Are we seriously looking for something that is needed and doing our best to fulfill that need? Love is reflected in love. Are we going to do it or not? Are we going to give or not? We have people that have called us that says that they go to our website every single day. They said, I start my day. Other ones said, sometime throughout the day, they are on our website. Other ones say, before they go to bed, they always make sure they check our website to see if there's something new we put up there. And we put something new probably 360 days a year, or 340 or something. You know, frequently on a Saturday or Sunday, we don't do anything because I normally don't have the programmers working. But Monday to Friday, we of late have been changing the entire home page, the entire page. Hours and hours and hours of work and programming. Takes 2,000 lines of code to do the kind of pages we do. 2,000 lines. So we're working. We're working hard. We're working consistently. We're putting out a lot of information. So anyway, most people give nothing to the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. They give nothing. We have over 100 authors. We have hundreds and hundreds of, if not thousands, of PDFs and MP3s that you can listen to or download, and they give nothing. I'm not complaining. I'm telling you that they don't give. That means they don't love. If they don't love, they're not giving. If they're giving, they're loving. They can't live unless they're loving. Mary Baker Eddy said, loving is living, and living is loving. So they're probably not going to be successful in their work because they're leaving out the most important. If you looked at all of the qualities that Jesus expressed, probably love would stand out as the most glaring thing to us. I mean, that is like he was a mountain of love. He was loving when he was on the cross. He was thinking of his mother's future. He asked John to take care of his mother, who was there, one of the half a dozen people that came to his crucifixion. He taught thousands and thousands of people, and nobody showed up. One disciple, John. He appeared to John on the island of Patmos after he ascended. Yeah, that's all documented in the Bible. Another wonderful author we have is Dr. Robert C. Putnam. He is probably the second best Bible scholar to Mary Baker Eddy. Anyway, he has 10 Bible lessons that tell you all you need to know about the Bible in the first 8, which covers the Old Testament. The 9th is chapter about Christ Jesus. And the 10th is about the second coming of the Christ. Now, the book is only 169 pages, but there are hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents that you need to study in preparing to study the book. He takes it paragraph by paragraph, what you should be studying. And the references are all in the Bible, all from the Bible. So, if we're not giving, don't expect to be receiving a healing. Because love, what is love? Love is nurturing all of the other qualities to fulfillment. You're nurturing mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. That's what love is. So, if you're not loving, then you're missing something in all of those because you're not nurturing them. And when you get the love, that is wholeness, fulfillment, completeness. In fact, that's part of the title to this recording. The focus was on mind and love, mind being the enlightenment and love being the fulfillment. Love has to permeate all of our thought, speech, and action. If it doesn't, we're going to have trouble. Mary Baker Eddy said, the way to progress most rapidly is to study the letter and imbibe the spirit. The spirit is the spiritual nature of God. The letter is learning the 32 planks starting at page 330. That's the letter. The definition of God is the letter. The three quotes at the beginning are the letter. The whole 700 pages of the textbook is the letter. But without the Spirit, we're in big trouble. You have to imbibe the Spirit. The Indians imbibed the Spirit. The American Indians, they had a lake. It was so beautiful, they called it the Smile of the Great Spirit. They recognized a superior power. They recognized God. They called him the Spirit, Great Spirit. Okay, the next one. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And God leadeth us not into temptation, but delivereth us from sin. disease, and death. Well, that's how Mary Baker Eddy defines evil. Anything unlike God is evil. And boy, at the top of the list is sin, disease, and death. And what does it say? God leadeth us not into temptation. God does not tempt us. The belief of evil is the source of all temptation, all suggestion. Now, if we do nothing with it, it cannot get into our consciousness. Although we do have to deny that it has any power. Anything at all that we're having trouble with in our life, we must deny that it has any power whatsoever. It doesn't matter what it is. Any topic. There's millions of them. In fact, Frederick L. Rawson wrote a textbook. We call it the A to Z. It's an encyclopedia of how to heal 1,315 different problems. Mary Baker Eddy says that we have to identify what the source of our problem is, and we have to explain it away with the specific truth that addresses that particular problem. We can't just make some kind of general statement and say, well, God is perfect and God is all in all, so whatever problem I have, it's gone. That won't work. That's like studying the mathematical table for fours and you're trying to learn the one for threes. You're trying to learn 3 times 3 and you look at the mathematical table for four and the number three is not even on there. Well, actually, I guess it probably is. 4 times 1, 4 times 2, 4 times 3, 4 times 4, yeah. So I guess it is on there. 3 is probably on the mathematical table for 4. But the point is, we have to be focusing like a rifle. We can't just be a shotgun. Okay? We have to focus where the problem is. We have to make sure we understand that evil operates on deception. Deception. So probably what we think the source of the problem is, we got a high probability that we're wrong. Because we're probably looking at the symptom instead of the source of the real problem. Mary Baker Eddy's students in the beginning, when they had a problem that they couldn't heal, you know, they would be working on a case for a patient. And so she permitted them to come to see her. And she would explain what the problem was, and she said, what are you working on? And they would tell her, and she'd say, that you're working on the wrong thing. She said, you should be working on this. And she'd tell them what, you know, what it was. She could sense, because of her spiritual nature and her spiritual advancement, she could sense exactly what the problem was on any case. And that comes as we get a better and better understanding that God is all-knowing. So, if we say that evil is sin, disease, and death, boy, that's right on target. Anything at all that is discordant is evil. Anything that is not good is evil, because evil is the opposite of good. And it says right here, God leadeth us not into temptation. So we can't blame God for a storm, an earthquake, doing something sinful. We can't blame God. We can blame universal belief, but that doesn't do any good to blame something else, because we have to protect ourselves against universal belief. We have to have that filter out there. And we have to also protect ourselves against things that are not obvious to us. It's called involuntary suggestion. And what does it say here? God delivereth us from sin, disease, and death. So the healing comes from having a better understanding of God being truth. The truth is, perfection. The lie is a mistake. Disease, sin, and death are mistakes. It's a false view of reality. Okay, here's the final. For thine is the kingdom. Thine, God. The kingdom belongs to God. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. Who are we going to give glory to? Well, people tried to separate Mary Baker Eddy from her discovery. They're not giving any grateful thought towards Mary Baker Eddy, and she's the only reason we have Christian Science. The only reason. She's it. Because she was able to connect with God, and she shared her discovery with the world. The interpretation, for God is infinite. All power, all life, truth, love, over all and all. For thine is the kingdom. God is infinite, infinite. The kingdom of God is infinite. And the power. She says all power. And the glory. So she gives life, truth, and love. That's the glory. Over all and all. See, that's the forever. If you study the Lord's Prayer without studying the spiritual interpretation, you are working with at least one hand tied to your back. Maybe both of them, or maybe both hands tied to both feet, so you can't move at all. You are taking away your freedom, your liberty, by not benefiting from the beautiful discovery of the only one that base their religion, their church, their discovery on what? What is missing from Christianity? In every other church except the Christian Science Church, what is missing? It starts with an H. The last letter is a G. Healing. Healing. They don't have any healing in any of these other churches. If they do, it's a faith healing. It's not one based on science. Christian Science is based on science. That means anybody can utilize the system that is in the textbook and bring forth a healing. Anyone. But of course, to make that happen, you need to follow, well, at least we recommend following what we suggested, studying the textbook from beginning to end for the rest of your life. And make it a study, not a biased viewpoint. Every time you start at the beginning again, don't even look at any notes or listen to any recordings that you did before. Start absolutely fresh, as if you never saw the book before. That's what you got to do. Make it your own all over again. Otherwise, you're just repeating the old stuff. How are you going to grow from doing it that way? You're not. That's the answer. There's no growth. Without fresh thought, there is no growth. Now remember, what we discussed in the Lord's Prayer with the spiritual interpretation can be applied to anything that you think you are deficient in, or a patient if you are working for patients. Anything at all can fit into this prayer. That's why Mary Baker Eddy says it fulfills every human need. She makes it very practical. It can be used for any human need. You don't have to even make up a prayer of your own. I mean, people create prayers all the time. And they say, protect this person or heal this person or whatever. And they name them and they might give traits about their personality. I mean, they're connecting healing to a person. And that's the first way to fail. You can pay churches and their audience will pray, you know, and you can pay them. You pay them a fee. They say, you give us so much, then we'll have our church pray for you. I recommend everybody read the book, The Council of Nicaea, by Dr. Robert C. Putnam. He was a chemist. That's where he got his doctorate title, chemistry. Read the book that is The Council of Nicaea. You will not believe what happened at 325 AD, because the same thing happened at 325 AD that happened in the Christian Science Church bureaucracy. They separated the discoverer from the discovery. They separated Jesus. From Christianity. Jesus was the Christ, the Son of God. He was not God. They named him God. In 325 AD, it was a meeting. The Council of Nicaea was a meeting between the three biggest churches and the three biggest governments. England, France, and Italy. Yeah, the Vatican. The Vatican was one of them that decided that Jesus is God. Well, they think their Pope is God. So it's easy for them to assign God to a man. They said, yeah, think of him as your God. And then put up a cross in your church with him hanging there, and so that you know your God is dead. I mean, they don't say show a picture of him ascending or even resurrecting out of his crucifixion. No. They should have a picture of the rock where the rock that was blocking the entrance to the tomb was rolled away. He did that mentally. No, they don't show that he was out of the tomb and he was healed of death. No, they don't show that. They don't show that he was healed of the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter by ascending. No, they don't show that. They show him being defeated, crucified with nails in his body and a crown of thorns on his head, bleeding. In fact, any of them that have pictures, that's how they show it. They show the blood and everything on the pictures. I mean, it's gruesome. Is that the kind of God you want to be worshiping? Or do you want to worship qualities that everyone can cultivate and reflect and is omnipresent? Wherever you are, you could be in an accident out in the middle of nowhere without any money or without any transportation because your vehicle was totally demolished. You could be lying in a stretcher on the way to the hospital, unconscious. No matter what your circumstance is, there will be a moment that you wake up. In fact, if you see the accident about ready to happen, you should make a declaration right there. That'll make a difference. That'll make a difference. The churches have crucified Jesus every day that they have a cross with him hanging on there in their auditorium. How about these necklaces? That's what it is. Jesus hanging on a cross. Yeah. So you're gonna remind yourself that, yeah, he's dead. He's gone. That's my God, but I'm going to worship him. Even though he himself said, why call me good? There's only one good, and that is God. Well, we ignore him. Anyone that totally violates what he himself tells us, they're not paying attention. Says here, God is infinite, all power, all life, truth, love, over all and all. Over all and all means that he is the source and he is the manifestation. And the manifestation is included in the source. Otherwise, the source is not a source. A source without a manifestation is not a source. So we have to say that if there is a source, the manifestation is connected to the source. It's all one. It's all one. They're not two things. It's not and. It's including is the operative word. Not and. Not the source and the manifestation. It's the source including the manifestation. If you study in the way that was suggested, you will be able to change everything in your life for the better. Everything. Every relationship. Every business arrangement. Everything in your life. Everything. Everything about your life will change. Richard Strain, the one I mentioned that said he has no time to study, by the end of the week, that means within 7 days, things changed so dramatically for the better that he had no problem having 5 hours a day to study. The first day was probably a struggle. The second day, third day, fourth day. By the end of the week, his schedule totally changed and the pressures on him totally changed so that he was able to study 5 hours a day without any problem. And it wasn't too long before he was in demand to give talks on Christian Science. Because he really went after it. He really went after it. He made it his own. When you're studying, I've got to tell you that Mary Baker Eddy had a wonderful vocabulary. She was deemed to have a vocabulary second only to Noah Webster. And that is the greatest dictionary you can use if you use the one that was published in 1828. It's been reprinted, so you can get a brand new copy of it. In fact, it's all online. You know, you can buy the software to where you get the complete thing, or you can just look up a particular word that gives you a partial amount of information on it. The whole world is at your fingertips. The whole world of progress. Not the whole world of matter. The whole world of spirit. Which is the reality. It's at your fingertips. And it can be applied to any problem, anytime, no matter where you are, no matter what the circumstance is. It's up to you. Look in the mirror and point your finger at yourself. Your thumb points back back to you. So everything's pointing to you. The thing that you're pointing to, the mirror and your thumb that points back to you. It all depends on you. What do you want to accomplish? Are you happy with everything right now? Well, then don't waste your time. If you think you're on top of the world, go. Go for it. Stay in the same realm of thinking. This won't do you any good anyway unless you're ready to make a change. You notice that Mary Baker Eddy spent the writings of 2 pages to get our thought prepared before we even started to read the Lord's Prayer. We started on page 14, and the Lord's Prayer begins on page 16, about midway down. So she spent all of page 15 and half of page 16 as an introduction to a short prayer. We have to be prepared. You want to study those synonymous terms for God frontwards and backwards. There's about 800 words that define what each of those 7 words are. I mean, they define them as a combination. So in other words, there might be 60 or 70 that define what mind is, and, you know, a similar number or so that defines what spirit is, and soul, and principle, and life, truth, and love. 800 total words, approximately, will, if you learn what those are and which words they go to, because this is a structure, you can't be putting qualities of love into mind, or qualities of soul into principle. There's a few exceptions, but generally, the words that define a term define that term uniquely, and they can't be assigned to another word. So it's just like the math tables. If you want to learn the 3s, you don't be studying the 4s. If you want to learn mind, you know, realize that that definition is different than what it is for the other 6. So you've got to learn that, and you also need to learn the operators. In mathematics, it's add, subtract, multiply, and divide. In divine metaphysics, the 4 operators, and there just happens to be 4 also. Music has a different number of operators. Chemistry, they're different. But in divine metaphysics, the 4 operators are the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and science. The Word means, what is God? Learn about what is God. That's the Word. The Christ is translating it just like Jesus did. When Jesus saw a man that was blind or sick or dead, he translated it into what the spiritual reality was about the real individual, not what a body is showing, but he translated the real spiritual nature of God's idea. That's translating. So whatever he saw, he translated it to the truth. And then the 3rd one is Christianity, and that is taking what God is about, which is the Word, translating it, which is the Christ, and then using that and combining it with understanding to bring about a healing. And that's what Christianity is. It demonstrates the truth. And science is the 4th one, and that means that we have mastered the demonstration so that we're automatically living a translated life. We've arrived. It's like Jesus. He ascended. We're at the point of ascension when we're at the point of science. I'm so grateful for everything that I've learned from all of the various authors that I've studied, and for grateful also for all humanity, for whatever they learn from their study of the Bible. And I'm so grateful for the discovery of Christian Science by Mary Baker Eddy and her founding the religion and being a leader, giving us so much in the way of tools and understanding, and her example of love. She was attacked by everyone all the time, just like Jesus was. So grateful for her perseverance that she didn't give up or give in or quit. She hung in there until she brought science, Christian Science, to fulfillment. And it's up to each one of us to make it our own. But I'm so grateful for what she did and all these other advanced authors, some of which have been mentioned here, Frederick Rawson and Wentworth Winslow, Helen Wright. Joel Goldsmith. No end to my gratitude. And whatever truth has been stated in this recording cannot be altered, because truth can't be changed. It's always true. That's the way it defeats evil. Evil keeps changing, trying to trick. It's not consistent. It's the opposite of being consistent. It's deceitful. Deceit can't be consistent. Truth is consistent. Truth heals. Evil fails. Is finally exposed, seen for its nothingness. And then we can eradicate it. Thank you, dear Father, Mother, God, for each day that I gain a little bit more. As it says in Isaiah, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. God is all in all, infinite, supreme, divine. Amen.